Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And welcome to the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. Trevor Anderson here, a chart manager here at Billboard, joined by
Gary Trust, Billboard's co-director of charts.
We want to thank you for joining us on another episode of the Chart Beat Podcast, where we find out why what's on the charts is on the charts. All right, before we flash back, looking at some of the big moments across Idol on the Billboard charts, we'll take a sneak peek at what's happening this week on the Billboard Hot 100. If you've been somewhere out of commission for the past month or so, you have missed the monumental God's Plan by Drake, which is sitting atop the Hot 100 for a sixth week in a row. It's been a streaming monster. Even by Drake standards, this is a completely another league, with the video coming out a few weeks ago really helping the cause up. This week, again, we're sitting above the 90 million threshold, which is something that only Drake's God's Plan and Bauer's Harlem Shake have ever been able to achieve. So this is just, territory that is enormous, and Drake just keeps week after week setting new records for himself.
Yep, 92.8 million U.S. streams in the tracking week makes it the fourth biggest streaming week ever. And two of them, as you just said, belong to Harlem Shake. Two of them now belong to God's Plan. So absolutely historic levels each week it's being a part of.
And if you're tired of God's Plan, there's some new action shaking up the runner-up spot. So maybe a challenger that Drake will have to fend off in the coming weeks. Post Malone's Psycho, featuring Ty Dolla $ign, debuting at number two. Huge first week for that as well. Streaming actually doing a big part of the lifting as well, pulling over 50 million streams for the week for Psycho. Now, of course, we saw the damage that Post Malone can do on the Hot 100 the end of last year with the song Rockstar, which actually also debuted at number two. Believe it or not, actually had fewer streams in its first week than Psycho. So Post opening some are getting bigger and bigger, so the Post Malone fan base is out there growing. And Rockstar, as we all know, went on to have 8 weeks at number one. So with Psycho starting up in the runner-up spot, again, there's no momentum loss for Post Malone at all. And even though we're not sure what's going on with the album, when it might be coming out, we know there's some tour dates coming up in a few months, so it seems like something's got to be coming out then. Another number two debut, huge news for him.
And Xander in our charts department came up with a cool stat that Post Malone is only the second rapper and only the eighth artist ever to have multiple debuts at numbers one or two on the Hot 100. It joins Eminem, so that's pretty elite company. And looking ahead to Can Psycho Go to Number One, this is the 22nd song in the Hot 100's history to debut at number two out of the first 21. 11 of them went to number one, so over half wound up going on to number one. It's case by case. I'm not sure how predictive that is for Psycho, but pretty good odds.
Well, yeah, about a 50-50 shot right there. Obviously, like we said, just coming off the heels of a number one single at the end of last year, so things looking pretty good. He did, even though, yes, there was Taylor Swift out at the time, yes, Cardi B was up there at the same time, none of those songs just pull in the consistency in numbers on streaming like Drake can. So he'll have his work cut out for him, and of course we'll keep you updated in the coming weeks as to how that race shakes out and whether, if Post Malone can topple Drake, that'll be just another indicator of just how big he's gotten in this past year.
That was our psychoanalysis. Our intern Meg laughed.
I mean, where, in the distance. Where does the guy come up with this? Has it been? Do you sit on this, or do you just? Does it just come naturally?
You can't explain talent like that, Trevor.
I guess you can. It just inspiration strikes how and when it may. All right. Well, that will be a little piece on the Hot 100 this week. Not playing the songs, but if you do miss the full recap, head over to billboard.com and there's the full chart. Not even just the top 10, all 100 positions there.
Well, instead of this week's top 10, we've got four times that. If you're an American Idol fan, we've got the top 40 songs by American Idols all time. So what we're doing is over the next couple weeks, because Idol is back this Sunday, March 11th on ABC.
If you have missed it in the past year and a half, if you've wondered where your life will go, wonder no more, because ABC is here to save you.
So over the next couple weeks, Idol flashback, because Idol has just been so huge on the Billboard charts, going back now 16 years, about 16 years since 2002, the first season when Kelly Clarkson was the first winner, and a moment like this went right to number one on the Billboard Hot 100. So many hits to look back on. We figured we'd do that over the next couple weeks, go 40 to number one, the biggest hits on the Hot 100 by American Idol contestants, and some guests involved with the show too. We'll start this week with our special guest this week, Scotty McCreary, the winner of season 10 in 2011, recently chatted with Jim Asker and Norbert Nix of his record label in Nashville. So they're coming up as our special guests on the podcast this week as we count down number 40 to number one. Just before we do that, Trevor, earliest memories of Idol. Were you watching from the beginning?
Yeah, when it comes to Idol, I must have. I know I watched the first season. I don't think I watched it at the very, very beginning. I didn't have my calendar set for it or whatever. I was probably, 10 or 11 at the time. But over the course of the summer, as it became more and more of a thing, I definitely started tuning in. Probably by the time there was a top 32 or top 24, whatever number they kind of did back then, before it got to the live shows, I remember being invested. And then, of course, when the live shows and they do the whole revamp and the theme weeks and all that kind, I mean, by then I was definitely into it.
Yeah, I wasn't really watching it until 2008, which is about 6 years in.
So when everyone else stopped watching, Gary started watching.
I like to jump into things afterwards.
So you almost missed the entire sort of Paula Abdul run.
I missed pretty much the heyday, those first few years.
When it was just Randy, Paula, and Simon. Yeah. That was the dream team.
I like to get on things when it's a little quieter.
Once we get Ellen DeGeneres and Cara DioGuardi in the mix, that's when Gary shows out.
But it was the first, it was the David Cook season. That's when I started watching. And I followed it all through those judges, changes, and even to the last couple seasons. So it's back. We'll see what it's like coming up Sunday night. But in the meantime, let's celebrate all the music that has hit Billboard charts over the years. Again, number 40 to number one. Let's kick it off. The biggest hits by American Idols on the Billboard Hot 100, starting with number 40.
I would do it for you. For you. Baby, I'm not moving on. I'll love you long after you're gone. For you. For you. You will never sleep alone. I'll love you long after you're gone. And long after you're gone, gone, gone.
The way I felt. But I was thinking to myself. Truth is, I never got over you. Truth is, wish I was standing in the shoes. And when it's all said and done, guess I'm still in love with you. Truth is, I never should have let you go. In everything,
catching my breath, letting it go. Turning my cheek for the sake of the show. Now that you know this is my life, I won't be told what. Catching my breath, letting it go. Turning my cheek for the sake of the show.
Again, been so long that you forget the way I used to kiss your neck.
Remind me.
So on fire, so in love. Way back when we couldn't get enough.
Remind me.
numbers 40 through 36, recapping the 40 biggest hits by American Idol contestants on the Billboard Hot 100 here on the Billboard Sharpie podcast. We started at number 40. It makes sense to start with Kelly Clarkson, right? She's the first idol. So season one winner in 2002, that was Don't You Want to Stay with Jason Aldean. Obviously, you think of Kelly Clarkson as a pop star, but she's done so many different sounds. That was a number one for 3 weeks on the Hot Country Songs chart. She also had a number two hit, remaking her own Because of You with Reba McEntire. She's had number ones in the Hot 100, Billboard 200, Hot Country Songs, Dance Club Songs, Pop Songs. So Kelly Clarkson's really shown... format doesn't matter when you have a voice like that. She's been able to do just about every sound. Number 39, going from season 1 to season 11 in 2012, Phillip Phillips. He was the winner of that season. That was his second big hit, Gone, Gone, Gone. A lot of people probably think it's called For You. It's called Gone, Gone, Gone. Number 24, Hot 100 hit in 2013. Number 38, Truth Is from Fantasia. She won 2004, season 3. Number 21 hit in 2005. It's number one adult R&B songs hit for 13 weeks. So number 21 on the Hot 100, but a multi-month number one at R&B radio. Number 37... I have a feeling, Trevor, we're going to be saying this name a lot. Kelly Clarkson, coming up on this countdown. The second song from Kelly Clarkson, Catch My Breath, hit number 19 in 2013. I always felt like that song was, kind of felt like it was so autobiographical, sort of like how a moment like this, kind of you could take it as the moment when she won Idol. The song kind of felt like she'd been in the business for over a decade at this point, and Catch My Breath kind of felt like it was confessional that maybe you need a little break at some point.
Yeah, the song interesting in a lot of ways because we'd seen Kelly Clarkson kind of in a lot of roles throughout the first decade that she had in the industry. We saw her obviously win Idol, become this huge pop star, but have some moments of fallout with Clive Davis. After her third album didn't do so well, they kind of had that public war of words. A lot of people sort of calling attention to her appearance and how she changed and saying some disgraceful things. So it was, you know, it's a great song, I think, to the point that you made, really, for Kelly to just sit back. This song comes out basically at the end of 2012, around when her Greatest Hits album comes out, so really capturing her first decade, 2002, 2012, and you're right, it's just a nice point in time, probably, for her to hit the reset button, have her first Greatest Hits album, get that first chapter of her career out the way, and get ready for the next one.
And number 36, we just heard Remind Me from Brad Paisley, a duet with Carrie Underwood. He was an established country star since the end of the 1990s. And you add Carrie Underwood, that's Brad Paisley's had 18 number one hits on the Hot Country Songs chart. Carrie Underwood's now up to 14, so a total superstar power on that song. Number one hit for both of them, top 20 hit on the Hot 100 in 2011. So got some Carrie so far, some Kelly Clarkson. We're actually going to hear 14 different idols on the countdown coming up from number 40. So if it seems like there's lots of Carrie Underwood and Kelly Clarkson, there is, but there's lots of other idols, not all winners too. There's other idol finalists coming up in these 40 songs, 26 top tens, including 7 number ones. So again, just showing how Idol has been so big on Billboard charts over the years. Let's keep going up to number 35, and I look back at the 40 biggest Hot 100 hits by American Idols.
Surprise, I won't be tomorrow. I can't believe that I stay till the day. Yeah, you
And we're up to number 35 through 31 here, counting down the biggest hits on the Billboard Hot 100 from American Idol alumni. At number 35, we heard the song Flying Without Wings, as done by Ruben Studdard, who was a season 2 winner way back in 2003. So the song was a dual-sided single released with a cover of the song Superstar, which actually has been a big hit for a couple of times for a lot of different artists. It started as a Delaney and Bonnie song. A lot of people may know the Carpenters version, which actually was a number 2 hit on the Hot 100. And conveniently enough, this Superstar Flying Without Wings double also was a number 2 hit on the Hot 100. Kind of go figure that it was blocked from number 1 by Clay Aiken, who was the runner-up on season 2.
Right.
So kind of, you know, a little weird there. Doesn't really help that sort of forever conspiracy that there was something with the votes that was messed up and Clay should have won. So it doesn't really help that Clay ended up outselling Ruben in that week. But in any case, you know, Ruben got the title. Clay got the number 1. So I guess everybody wins a little bit. Interestingly, I think Ruben kind of brings in a dimension about Idol that is always, to me, kind of interesting about how it fits in the landscape, is that, you know, you have somebody like Ruben Studdard. A little hard to navigate that landscape after Idol. He did have 4 top 10 albums on the top R&B hip-hop albums chart, but the songs and the momentum never quite got there. R&B was a little, I mean, in the years after Ruben won, R&B was big for about a year and a half, and then the sound of the landscape kind of shifted to so much hip-hop.
Right.
It kind of gave way to another pop dance rise. So one of those weird things where we have great vocalists out there like Ruben, but maybe it doesn't translate as easily as it does for, say, a Kelly Clarkson, or, of course, Carrie Underwood, who kind of has, you know, the country landscape is always consistent no matter what's really going on in pop music. But, you know, for some of these R&B stars, Ruben Studdard, Fantasia, a few others, a little weird to navigate that afterwards.
Yeah, it makes you think if Idol and some of these shows had started maybe a decade earlier, the early 90s, maybe they all would have coincided with the Whitney, Mariah, Celine Dion era. Maybe might have worked better for some artists who are so more pure R&B.
Could have been. I will say the timing did work out nicely for one thing. If you remember Ruben's first post-Idol release, his first debut, I guess his debut song from his first solo album, Sorry 2004, specifically dated to that year. And if you forgot what that song sounds like, don't worry, it'll be coming up a little later on the countdown, so stay tuned for that. All right, number 34, speaking of another R&B winner of American Idol, we got I Believe by Fantasia, who was the season 3 winner, so a year after Ruben in 2004. I Believe it was actually co-written by another graduate of the American Idol program, Tamira Gray, who was the 4th place finisher way back in season 1,
yeah,
the same season Kelly Clarkson competed on. And I Believe actually debuted at number 1 on the Hot 100, so got Fantasia her very first number 1 on her first try. And if you remember the landscape of what, I mean, you don't have to even be a charts fan to remember the landscape of music in 2004, because it all was about Usher in that moment. And Fantasia, believe it or not, stopped even the mighty Usher for a week at number 1. Usher had been number 1 for 19 straight weeks going in. 12 weeks of that was with the song Yeah with Lil Jon and Ludacris. 7 weeks with the song Burn. And Fantasia is the one who gets up there, breaks that for a week, and then Usher goes right back to number 1 with Burn for another week, and then Confessions Part 2 follows right after that. But, you know, in that span, Fantasia was the only one who could dethrone Usher, even if it was just for 7 days.
Well, I think chart fans know that it got to the point in the mid-2000s where we kind of set aside that week every year. We knew right after the Idol finale there's a good chance, because sales were always so huge for these songs, that whoever won had a really good chance at debuting at number 1. So we knew that week right after the Idol finale at the end of May each year, that was probably the week you were going to see an American Idol song debut at number 1 with huge sales.
Yeah, and there'll be another one the year after Fantasia wins. We'll talk about that song a little later. Also stops another monster song in its tracks at number 1 in the summer. All right, moving on to 33, we have the song No Surprise from Daughtry. The only band of sorts on this list. Most of the American Idol graduates, obviously solo artists, but Chris Daughtry really embracing that rock credibility, rock credence, forms an entire band, and they have a nice slew of hits. We'll talk about some of them coming up towards the top of the countdown, so just to prove how successful they were. But for the song No Surprise, the lead single from their second album, Leave This Town, back in 2009, and it was a follow-up to, I think, what many people may not have expected to be such a solidly commercially successful debut album. Daughtry was the fourth place finisher on season four. So, I mean, for someone to finish in fourth place, maybe there's not as much expectation, not nearly as much as the winner, but to turn that around and have, as we'll talk about later, a massive, massive year in terms of album performance is incredible.
And rock is the one format where you kind of fight that cred battle more than anywhere else. So to come from what could be considered sort of a pageanty kind of a show like American Idol, you're kind of fighting that in some ways. Come from that TV side, it kind of gives you a little bit more of that commercial look, which some of the rock snobs could look down on. But they fought that. They did pretty well. They had a nice following in rock for a while.
And I guess some of the rock snobs might, you know, sort of roll their eyes at this mention, but it is worth pointing out, you know, No Surprise was co-written with Chad Kroeger and a few others. So I know some people will say, well, Nickelback isn't really, you know, isn't really rock, but enough to where, you know, an established, you know, mainstream rock band wants to work with you, co-write a song, that's not nothing. All right, and switching gears over to country for these last two, we've got a double helping of Carrie Underwood songs, number 32, kicking things off with Cowboy Casanova. As I'm sure everyone remembers, Carrie Underwood, the season four winner, and who has gone on to be a stellar country star in her own right. As Gary mentioned, Carrie, 14 number ones to date on the Hot Country Songs chart, Cowboy Casanova becoming the eighth of that. And this is leading into her third album. So by her third album, she'd already had 8 number one hits by the time that came out. So that's a huge accomplishment for her. And we'll run through some of those bigger hits from her early albums coming up. But, you know, Carrie Underwood also found this great niche, I think, maybe in a cultural moment. She got a couple of those good songs about, you know, sort of warning you about, you know, these men who are no good for you, you know, has no problem calling out guys for what she sees as sleazy behavior, or, you know, somebody who's trying to just play your heart. So, I mean, I think a lot of women grabbed onto that kind of in the same vein as maybe some of that Miranda Lambert, Gunpowder and Lead. I mean, this was a, you know, there was some no holds back, you know.
It's a great tradition in country music too. Some of the biggest female stars ever, going back to Loretta Lynn, yeah, to Tammy Wynette. It's a tradition.
Dolly, all of them, yeah. They know how to call it out, and just a little more grit, I think, with this latest generation with Miranda and Carrie, and they took that tradition and carried it proudly into the next era. All right, and Carrie Underwood again coming up at number 31 with Jesus Take the Wheel. So a little different sound than maybe a Cowboy Casanova. I mean, a great ballad that really started off her career, her first single from her first album, Some Hearts, way back in 2006. The song was her first of those 14 number one hits on the Hot Country Songs chart, and I guess given the Christian themes and the sound, it resonated with the Christian audience as well, becoming a number four hit on the Hot Christian Songs chart. And even though, you know, country songs can cross over into the pop territory a lot, kind of interesting, I thought, for the song to be a top 20 hit on the Hot 100. I mean, Carrie Underwood didn't have much pop presence. I mean, this was her first song from her first album, so she'd only really had the Idol Coronation single before. And not really an up-tempo-y kind of song. Not a song that necessarily lends itself to an easy pop crossover, especially in the era of, you know, big hip-hop and R&B sounds of 2005. But a nice breakthrough for her, and of course that bodes well for the next couple of songs that, with this song making sort of those first inroads, you've got some songs coming up later from the album that just carry that flag and keep it going.
And talking about how big a deal it was for her to start with her first country single and go to number one on Hot Country Songs, no female artist would come along and go to number one with her debut country hit for about a decade. It took Kelsey Ballerini, Love Me Like You Mean It, in 2015. That's how long it took for an artist to break through, a female artist, on that that kind of level that Carrie Underwood did.
And she also broke through on a big critical level as well. Jesus Take the Wheel winning 2 Grammy Awards for Best Female Country Vocal Performance and Best Country Song. So, you know, kind of rebuking people who may have thought of Idol as just a commercial powerhouse, just a teen show, just in it for the ratings, that, you know, proving that these winners are legitimate performers and contenders and can take some of these major awards as well.
One of the people who believed in her right from the beginning was Simon Cowell. Isn't he the one who said after her audition, he said, you're going to become, I think he said, the biggest Idol ever?
It may have been the audition or may have been one of the early performances, but yeah, I think he said he predicted that she would go on to win the show and I believe sell more albums or records than anybody else had. So, major prediction there, and I guess if you must praise Simon Cowell, he proved to be pretty on the money. I mean, Carrie's been, alongside with Kelly, you know, the most consistent and the biggest names by far to come out of the Idol playbook.
And here's something to think about. If there had been no American Idol, there's a chance. Maybe there's no One Direction. Maybe there's no Fifth Harmony, because maybe Simon Cowell's profile never rises to that point where he winds up leading the Psycho label, and we got those acts later.
If you're a harmonizer, directioner, and any of those groups of any of those, you know, shows that have come off, yeah, I mean, maybe you owe a debt to summer 2002 and Kelly Clarkson and the generation before, my generation, who watched it for you.
Who knew when we all hated Simon back then? He wound up giving us so much all these years later.
Oh, and it's like, kind of like a Gordon Ramsay thing. You know, he's a genius, but man, he can be rough.
All right, let's take a little break from the countdown, because we have a special guest, actually, 2 special guests, an American Idol champion from 2011 season 10, Scotty McCreery. He won that year over a good friend, actually, Lauren Elena. And Scotty just had his first number one hit on the country airplay chart with 5 More Minutes. So even 7 years later, after winning Idol, still coming through with new chart breakthroughs. So congratulations on that. On the new label that's recently been put together, Triple Tigers. So Scotty is here. Norbert Nix from the label is here. And Jim Asker, our country chart manager and Billboard Chartbeat Nashville correspondent. They're all chatting about Scotty's breakthrough to number one, American Idol, how he started, you know, the background of his new song. So let's chat with an American Idol champion, Scotty McCreery, here on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast. Then we'll come back with more of the countdown. We'll go from number 30 to number 21 this week.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Time rolls by, the clock don't stop. I wish I had a few more drops of the good stuff, the good times.
Hey everybody, it's Jim Asker from Billboard on the Chartbeat podcast, and I'm very excited today because with us is the one and only Scotty McCreery.
Hello, hello.
Scotty.
How you doing?
And Norbert Nix.
Hello.
GM partner of Triple Tigers Records, which was launched, what date?
It was launched last year. We launched it in July last year.
Right.
Probably. But it was together before then, a few months. We were putting it all together before we hired the staff and then signed a couple artists.
I love this dynamic of having the executive and the artist. But Scotty, first Absolutely. Thing I want to say is just congratulations on the success of...
Thank you very much.
By the time this airs, hopefully the single will already have been a Billboard number one.
Yeah, fingers so crossed.
Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you very much. Knock on wood. I appreciate it. Yes, knock on wood.
Yeah, man. And it's just a great song. Could we just start in, there's so much history with you.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, you're like
24.
Is that, I've known Norbert longer than you've been alive.
That's about right.
Is that true?
Yes, probably true.
We've run a couple marathons together, by the way.
Oh, awesome. Norbert, that's right. Y'all both do those.
So I want to start with how you guys got together, first of all, and you ended up on Triple Tigers, and because you had been getting a lot of feedback already with streams and everything on this song.
Sure.
And Norbert, tell us how that came about.
Well, the first time I heard the song, and I'm trying to remember exactly when that was, but I know when I heard it, I thought to myself, oh, my Lord, what, you know, Scott, this is Scotty McCreery's song. This is amazing. It's just an absolutely amazing song. And I know about, you know, feeling that and hearing that. And then I called Scotty's attorney to get together with him. So I wanted to get together with him. He didn't have a manager yet and he didn't have a label yet. So we had breakfast and we talked. And then the way this thing came down is George Curry, one of our partners, heard the song too. And eventually Scotty went with George for management. And then I called George. We talked about this. We're like, oh my God, we have to do this. We have to sign Scotty McCreery. I mean, why is he available? First of all, secondly, he's got this great song. He must have more great music. And so it happened. It was just perfect timing. It was perfect timing that we did that. So we put him on the roster and it was great. It was a great day when that happened.
Scotty, were you shopping around? Did you talk to other people too? Or how did this,
we had talked to other labels and talked to other management. It was a process. 2015 was when we wrote the song.
Because previously you were on Mercury Records after American Idol.
Absolutely. So we'd been there since the beginning for me in 2011 and parted ways there. And then, so we had the song since 2015. 2016 was when we parted ways. And so we're sitting there with what I think is my favorite song, my best song I've ever written. And I'm just excited and antsy to get the song out there. I want people to hear it.
And, yeah. You know, I remember the day Norbert called me and he was like, we're signing Scotty McCreery. And I said, okay. But you've got your launch act climbing up the charts and it wasn't where you knew it was going to go top 10 or even or number one yet. And
yeah, it was far away from that.
And
yeah.
And so, and then you're signing your second act. Were you a little worried about that? You're going to jump in with two acts right away and
being
a new label?
That was a big concern. That was the main concern that we really had to have a strategy for because we knew the song was so great. But you just can't, you know, as a new label, send two new singles out because I think the risk of failure is huge because if you lose both of them, then you're toast. And so we had a lot of work to do on Russell Dickerson's Yours was climbing up the chart and it was doing quite well. But we really felt like we had to insert this into the mix because of the timing of it and the fact that, you know, Scotty's brand and who he is and what he means to radio and what he means to consumers and the way the song was reacting because they did go to radio and they've got really positive reaction from radio on this. So we had some information telling us it's not, you know, it's not that big of a risk in the sense that we could lose it at all.
And it kind of added artillery for you with the Russell, having Scotty then join the label. And listeners probably would not know this, but Norbert had a zillion years of experience at Sony and at Mercury. And you probably knew that going
in,
right?
For me, yeah.
Joining an indie label, but with powerhouse.
That's what I told
executives.
Everybody. Yeah, because I mean, when we first signed up, I was telling everybody we signed with Triple Tigers, and they'd be like, "Triple who?" I was like, "They're a new label. They're a brand new label." But when I met the staff, I mean, they are my words to everybody. Where they're set up to win.
And Kevin Herring's the head of promotion.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely.
Been here. He's been around at Warner and Lyric Street, and on and on. But the song had a lot of streaming and digital download activity already. Correct.
A little bit there. The biggest thing that was such a big reaction was YouTube. We debuted the song on the Grand Ole Opry and the Opry put it on YouTube. We didn't even know they were going to do that. And all of a sudden, before we know it, I wake up the next morning and I see on Facebook, I'm the number one trending topic. And I'm like, what did I do last night? You know, did I mess something up? But
yeah,
found out great. It was all about 5 more minutes in the song and people were sharing it. And It was millions of views before we even knew it. So it
you co-wrote the song.
Yeah, co-wrote with Frank Rogers and Monty Criswell.
And tell us, everybody who does might not have heard it yet, and we'll hopefully get on it as soon as they hear this, but sure. Tell us what the song's about.
Yeah, well, we had sat down. I'd been in Nashville writing for the new record for a while, and I just lost my granddaddy, Bill, and he was my guy. Like, he was just cool cat, you know, 85 years old, doing cannonballs in the backyard pool. Like, he was awesome. So loved him. Was just kind of talking to Frank and Monty about him and the things we used to do and golf together. And Monty was the one that actually said, man, it's just like you wanted 5 more minutes with the guy. And I was like, that's exactly it. That's the song we're going to write today.
It's a great song.
Thank you.
Just as a listener, when I first heard it, and I didn't hear it right away until, you know, I do the chart at Billboard, the country airplay chart and the hot country songs and streaming and digital. And I had seen it on the chart, but I listened to it after the fact a little bit. And your voice just kind of explodes out of the speakers. You've got that dominating voice. And what I love about it is, you know, we've got a lot of pop influence on the chart. Which is great. It's always been a great melting pot of this and that. Mm-hmm. And you are, it's a country record. Right off the bat, you know this is a country song.
Thank you, man. I think at the core of country, no matter what, you know, different sound elements might come, the core of country music will always still be about the story of a song. Mm-hmm. That's going to be what country always comes back to.
And you didn't come to town to be a writer, right?
Not originally. Initially? I had written some stuff when I was younger, just, you know, those young 15-year-old Taylor Swift breakup songs, you know, when I was... before I'd even done Idol or anything. But coming to town, my first record, I didn't write anything. Of course, I made a record in 2 months and didn't know what in the world I was doing. Second record, I wrote a couple songs. See You Tonight was my biggest hit up until 5 More Minutes, and I wrote that one. But probably wrote 2 or 3 songs on the full record. And now this new album we have coming out in March will...
Seasons Change.
Seasons Change. Every song on the whole record is a co-write of mine.
You co-wrote all 11 songs.
Yes, sir.
It's a great album, by the way.
Thank you.
And a cohesive record from track to track.
Thank you. I think my favorite part about this record is that, number one, it's personal, but it kind of... It flows together from the beginning to the end. And there's one song in between, talks about how you're not ready for a ring on my hand, and then it goes to This Is It, which is my engagement song, and then Wrong Again, which is like, I never thought this was going to happen, but I'm wrong again. So.
Norbert, did you watch American Idol back when Scotty
I did watch that season. 2011? I watched that season when
and
he was on
it's like, oh, I'm going to sign this guy down the road.
Yeah, no, never thought about that. I mean, you know, I just was amazed that at the time you were 16.
Yeah, 16 when I started, and 17 when most shows go.
It was amazing, and it was, you know, again, when this happened, I knew that, and I knew that he was such a talent, and that combined with the song, the brand of who he is, was just amazing for us to have this opportunity. It was actually, we, you know, as a team, David Macias and George Curry and Bruce Kalmick, we were all, you know, very pleased that they had the opportunity to sign Scotty and to do this and to work with him on this song and the record. Like you said, Jim, the record's fabulous. I think, you know, there's follow-ups, it's what we call visceral content. It's very, you know, appealing to people.
And now you're going over my head with the vocabulary.
Oh man, you know, I just love that word.
Was the album done when you and Norbert got together and everybody else here?
I don't think so. We still had some work to do. We had a good amount of songs that were written and everything. We'd only had, I think, 5 more minutes in between that were set. And then we had to go in the studio and record 9 more songs.
I love the fact that 2011 American Idol, you and Lauren Elena, were you guys buddies?
Yeah,
by the way,
brother sister kind of relationship. We
two country acts. That was great to have two country
similar
acts.
Backgrounds. And the biggest thing for us was we had to go to school every day when we were on the show. So we were in a room, probably a quarter the size of the room, a small room, and just me and her doing class together for 3 hours a day. So we became good friends.
A bit tough to concentrate, I bet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe you guys will do a duet one day.
Maybe. We've always talked about it. I think if the opportunity presents itself down the road, you know, I would jump at it. And
What is it like, you know, having a number one? 2011, you're the star of American Idol. Now, this time later, a number one and an album coming out, highly anticipated. What's that like?
You know, it's two different highs, I would say. Coming off of, you know, the TV show, that was the biggest show in the world at that point. I mean, we had 30 million, 40 million people watching. Votes were nuts. And so that was just a high of 3 months of hard work in an Idol bubble. And all of a sudden, you know, it was the hottest thing out there, and it was awesome. But, you know, we're 7 years removed from that, and you want to be able to, you know, maintain your success. You want to keep putting music out that people still think is relevant and that they're still enjoying. And that's hard work, and it's a team effort. I've got a lot of good people around me that are helping me. And
You sure do.
Yeah, awesome people.
I've lived a lot of life since my last record. It's the opening line from your bio.
Yeah.
And so I'm reading that and skimming over things and reading, you know, addressing your story that I knew pretty well anyway. For me, it's like you're 24 years old, yet you've lived all this life.
It's incredible. It really is. My last record came out in 2013, and since then, I've, you know, for anybody, 17 to 24, that's a lot of growing up, a lot of years. There's a lot going on in those years. So move out on your own. I went to college for a few years, moved to Nashville here, have a place here, and getting married this year, got robbed at gunpoint. And, you know, now that we're all okay, we look back on it, we're like, man, that was wild. But honestly, just for life perspective, that's great to go in and write about. So have lived a lot of life, and I guess you can see that on this record. But, yeah, it's definitely a different high now.
This is it, this is now, this is what I've been talking about. Looking now, can't you see forever? So take my hand, just take it in. This is the moment we won't forget. On top of the world here together. If there ever was a time for a perfect kiss, this is it.
Talking with Scotty McCreery and Norbert Nix of the record label Triple Tigers, where Scotty is recording. And the new album, Seasons Change, March 16th is the street date. And did you guys strategize about when to put this out? I mean, did you just happen to say, oh, we'll do it the week after it goes number one?
We thought it'd be when we're actually peaking. Yeah. This single is blown up faster than we even thought.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little quicker than what we were anticipating, you know. And at the top, it's tough to calculate that exactly the way it is. But the big records like this one, you know, they start really ramping up here at the top.
And Scotty has had two number one albums on our Billboard Top
Country
albums. Debuting at number one, which is phenomenal. So we're sitting in a conference room with all kinds of Sharpie notes on this table, on this board behind me. So is this where you sit and kind of strategize about?
This was the war room, yes, for a moment. We sat in here and we have those notes up there about how to get to number one, how to, you know, who's going to be up there, what the competition is, just all the aspects of it. Yeah.
How often do you guys talk together or with other people at the label? Are you
good amount? Yeah. And my manager, Scott Stillman, I think, talks with everybody daily because I'm on the road. I'm busy. I've never been this busy.
And honestly, Scott, your manager, at the Country Music Association, for how long were you?
10 years.
Wow. So just your team, just a lot of background.
Yeah, it's a team effort. I mean, from smallest guy, biggest guy on the road here in Nashville, I mean, I've got a lot of good people. For the first time, I've always had good folks around me, but for the first time, I really feel like it's one cohesive unit, and we're all one team, one goal, and we're all really strategized, and we're on the same wavelength. It seems like everything's just clicking right now, which is really an awesome feeling.
What's the second single?
Second single is
a song called This Is It.
Great song.
Thank you.
What's it about?
This is me and Gabi's engagement song.
What's her first name?
Gabi. It's like Gabby, but they're from Louisiana. They've got that Cajun accent. So Gabi is her name. Luke Bryan called her Debbie, so anything's better than that.
And is it true you guys met in kindergarten?
Yeah, we grew up together.
That's hard to even wrap your arms around, isn't it, Norbert?
Yes.
Norbert's been married 5 times.
Not true, everybody. Not true.
Just
once.
Kidding.
Once.
Just teasing. But you guys met in kindergarten, and then you're getting married in 2018.
Yeah, we grew up together, and we were always around each other. And so met in kindergarten, middle school, high school, went to class together. And I'd always kind of had my eye on her, especially in high school. And then after the show, I got back and realized I'm going to be on tour, and I was on the road with Brad Paisley. And I was like, if I don't make my move now, then I'm going to miss my chance. So asked her out, and luckily she said yes. And 6 years later, we're going to get married this year. And
congratulations.
Thank you.
And she's a nurse.
She is. She works at Duke Hospital, pediatric cardiac intensive care unit. Ooh. So I have learned not to complain about my days, because I'll, you know, what I do, I sing for a living. A lot of times I play golf before I sing. And so I say, man, I'm tired today, Gabby. And she'll say, really? I helped a baby with open heart surgery today. Tell me more about how tired you are. So I'm like, yeah, I'll probably stay quiet on that.
Do you know the date of the wedding yet?
We do. We're keeping it on the DL, but we're going
well,
out.
I'm
going
to make you the same offer I offered Maren Morris. I'll glad to give you the discount Spin Records at your reception if you want.
Well, thank
Norbert
you
and I will do it together.
We will do it.
Very cool.
All right. I know how to do a little bit of that.
Deal?
Cool.
Perfect. What kind of touring plans are there?
We're out all year. We're doing a lot of headlining stuff on my own. We'll open up for a few acts out there. But right now we're doing a lot of headlining stuff and some, you know, good sized theaters. And it's amazing when you have a single that's peaking, the difference it makes than when you haven't had a song doing anything for a little while. Crowds are showing up, selling out again. And it's, we got some heat going on the road right now. So it's really, really fun.
I want to ask Norbert about, you know, there's a lot of radio visits that go on with new artists and,
yeah.
Country radio is still the platform for country music, about discovering new music. And some programmers, people who program country music, probably were not, a lot of them come from Top 40 and other formats. Did you have to reintroduce him to some of these people?
That's a good question. You know, we did to a certain degree, but they were quickly aware of who he was and the brand. And then, you know, the song is always the element that introduces itself first. So when they hear the song, they're immediately, oh man, this is a great song. And then when they figure out who he is and where he's come from, it's very quick that they know that it's, you know, it's going to work and that it's a good thing for them to know who he is and play the record. But, you know, they're pretty smart, right? Programmers are pretty smart, Jimmy.
Well, they, I was, I don't know about these guys. I don't know.
They know the hits. They do. I mean, and I
well,
say
a hit's
that,
a hit. I used to say, I used to say, you know, I'll play a Gregorian chant if it gets me ratings. I don't really care.
Sure.
But at the same time, you're hearing a hit record or you're not. And that song, Five More Minutes, is a hit as soon as you hear it.
Well, thank you.
What I love is the story song. And so what's your take on country music today from when you started on Idol to now?
It's changed. Just the format in general has changed so much from when I first started. From my last record, it's changed.
In what ways?
I think talking about the sound of it or just the business of it, or well, you know, I'm a fan.
I know the business of, we can get into that in a second, but the sound, it's kind of always been a melting pot, right?
Yeah,
a little traditional,
and
a little pop, a little rock.
Yeah. And for me, I grew up, I mean, when I was growing up, my mom was playing Conway Twitty and George Jones and those kind of records in my house. But I grew up in the public school system in North Carolina and I'm with Garner High, and it's a melting pot school. So my friends, we were listening to country music, but we were also listening to rap and hip hop and R&B and pop. And so, and I was fans of it all. I mean, I got all those songs on my iPhone. So,
and you still visit radio stations, I'm sure, right?
Yeah. Every chance we get. I mean, this whole last week, that's what we were doing on the road.
Country radio seminar. Were you at the CRS?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And Lauren Elena, your friend, my friend, I love Lauren.
I heard she kicked butt.
At the New Faces show, which is, for anybody who doesn't know, how would you explain New Faces show, Norbert, to somebody who would not know?
It's a performance night of five different artists that the industry picks as the up-and-coming rising new stars. And they perform three of their new songs, and everybody sits in a big ballroom and they watch these people. And it's a great time because it's hard to really pick a winner out of that because, you know, those are the five best, you know, new talents that are out there. So it's good to see.
And some great talent this year.
Absolutely.
Carly Pierce and Midland. And we all rated people at our table, you know, one through five, all the Billboard people. My friend's colleagues from Billboard, and I put Lauren number one because I just thought she just knocked it out of the park. And with that, I just, as Norbert explained it, I was asking Kevin Herring downstairs, would Scotty be on that? Would he want to do that show next year? It was kind of, you know, Lauren had a number one on her sixth single.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same kind of timeline with you. And that's so weird to me that you were both on American Idol. And
it's
both
interesting how the timelines worked, and I really think it's just, I'm not sure if it's natural or what, but when we both started, she was 15, I was 16 on the show. And I mean, I know for myself, I won't speak for her, but I didn't have a clue what the business was all about or what I wanted to sing about at that age. But, you know, you grow up, you live a little life, and you learn a little bit more than you knew back then. And you can write about more stuff and write a little bit more
seriously. Were there any points where you thought, I'm just going to walk away from it?
On the show or in the business?
In general, in the
career?
Hollywood Week on the show, I thought I was just going to go home because I didn't. It was a terrible week. But in the business, no, I'm a competitor. I'm a singer and I'm an artist, but at the core of who I am, I'm a competitor. I grew up playing baseball and golf, and I want to beat people. It's just who I am.
Norbert's got that same competitive.
That's what I love about this guy.
I've actually run marathons with Norbert, so I know he. I would finish 2 hours behind him. So,
oh really?
He's got that competitive streak. Did anybody happen to say the song's too country at first? Because it's a country record.
No, I mean there was a little bit of that they weren't sure where Scotty was now at this point in his career, and when we were talking about, you know, when we first signed him, the fact that you were 23, I think, or 24, that you were 23 at that point, 24. You know, he's younger than most new artists that are signed.
Right.
And this journey you're talking about that he's gone through, which now he speaks through the songs. And that's what I love about it. Not only is A, competitor, but B, the songs he was writing was about real life, all the stuff he's been through, which again, timing in this business, timing is everything. So he came to this to us with this amazing project of songs about life and his life. And they were real. And like I said before, visceral. So when radio hears that, they go, oh my God, the song's great.
We've got to get on board because it's a hit.
Yeah, man. Absolutely.
And that's the one thing that when I was in radio, it didn't happen. Like, you bring stories to the radio stations now that are, the song's being streamed, it's being sold. That's the part you talked about, probably, that how that's changed.
Oh, yeah.
Since
launching
the
a record
beginning.
In 2018 is completely different than launching a record in 2013.
And I must say, I got to have lunch with Scotty and one of my Billboard colleagues, Tom Rowland. And I don't know where the song was on the chart. It was just starting, Scott.
Mm-hmm. 50s,
And we're sitting there having lunch, and I've noticed all these people looking over at Scotty, like everybody recognizes him. You got that. And this week, I just have to say, when I was telling my friends from the Brunt, you know, I have a lot of 20-something friends. I'm like, mm-hmm. I have to do an interview with Scotty McCreery this week. Oh, I love him. That's awesome, always the reaction. So
Very cool. He's
really well-liked, isn't he, Mike?
Yeah, he's real, you know.
And as a person, and right.
Amazingly so. It's usually in this business, it's a very pressured job being an artist. It's a very pressured job. I mean, there's a lot of demands and, you know, and people change, and it's really hard to make it, if you will, in this business as an artist.
How old is Russell Dickerson?
He's 29.
He's actually older than...
My point. Yeah, it's like, you know, Scotty's still 24. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a cool position to be in, and to have a good team around us is awesome.
And we were talking about your success on the radio chart. I have to say that on our hybrid chart, your song was top five this week.
Really?
Hot Country Songs, which is the derivative of the Billboard Hot 100, our main chart. You know, so it's a combination of streaming, sales, and radio. And that means, and I've seen songs that are radio hits but don't go that high on the hybrid chart.
Oh, really? Okay.
And your song is top five now, meaning it's a huge consumption hit already.
Awesome, man.
And that's got to feel really good, is that it's being consumed by the fans.
Right? Yeah, I think that was another early sign that we had for the song, was even when we were in the 50s or whatever, it was selling stream or sales per spin was like top five or something. Yep. We're like, man, people are, when they hear the song, they respond to it. And that's what you want people to do when they hear a song.
I vote for the title song being a single. I think that...
Seasons Change?
It's a hit record.
I love that one, man. That was the first song I wrote coming back from losing the label deal with Universal. And
oh, really?
First song I wrote for this record, and I was talking to the co-writers, James McNair and Tommy Cecil. I was like, you know, guys, hey, things happen in life. You just got to come out of it alive and feel good. And, you know, life's all about, it's that roller coaster, ups and downs. And 2016 for me was definitely the down part. That wasn't fun. I didn't have fun that year, but... You know, come out of that, the competitor, and you got to come out refreshed and got a new label deal and management, and everything's rocking and rolling, and seasons changed, and we're having a heck of a lot of fun right now.
It's an appropriate title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Are you always writing?
I try to be. I'm at least always thinking of ideas. You know, the way I do it, I love to come to Nashville for a week or two and just write every day. And then I might let my brain refresh and recharge. And
do you write by yourself sometimes too, or always with partners?
Every now and then, a lot in my room by myself. But most of the time when I'm finishing a song or do a full song, I'll have co-writers in there.
Are you an observer, like you're on the golf course, you're in a restaurant, of things that you tuck away and that become songs later?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got a whole list on the iPhone of different titles, hooks, and I'll look back a year ago and I'll be like, what the heck was that? That's terrible, and delete that. But, you know, in the moment, you're always trying to think of different ideas.
No, do you write songs? Because you're...
Doesn't everybody in Nashville write songs?
I don't write songs, no.
I think they all do. Everybody does.
Right. You do, though, huh?
Yeah, I fool around sometimes with songs, but I don't know if I call
them
songs.
What instrument do you play?
I have a music degree, so I play bass and guitar and keyboards and all that stuff. So
I've known Norbert a long time and I never knew you had a music degree. Yeah.
There we go. If one of the guys in the band ever has to sub out, we can just bring you on the road, man.
All right. So each of you tell me what's going to happen for 2018 we should be excited about. You go first, Norbert.
I think we should be excited about all the great music that's coming out and, you know, about the compelling artists that are coming out. But, you know, and for us particularly at Triple Tigers, you know, the records are deep. The songs, the beginning songs, we've had a really a great start on this, you know, two number ones in a row by these guys, by Russell and Scotty. And, you know, I think historically maybe that hasn't happened before. But, you know, we look at this and we move on and we say, okay, 2018, that's a really great start. So the great part about it is continuing the journey, you know, the second singles, the third singles, the content that these guys have written.
Are you already thinking about the next album?
Absolutely.
You are?
We're all the way down the road to, you know, we're trying to think ahead.
You've already got the fourth album out.
Yeah. Yes. Greatest hits. No. But truthfully, we're excited about the music and about, you know, continuing the upward, you know, spike there. Keep going. You know,
Scotty, 2018.
2018, I think that's just my... I don't know if it's comeback year or what, but I mean, we were away for a little bit and I'm coming back with my biggest hit yet and on the road. Like I said, crowds are filling up the places we're playing and it's really been fun. So I'm just re-energized more than anything. I'm re-energized and I'm having a blast.
What's that like when you're singing a song like 5 more minutes and everybody's singing it back to you?
There's nothing like it. There's nothing. We just added in a part for the show where we give them the whole last chorus. They take it themselves and they're screaming it back to us right now, which...
That's got to be something, huh?
Yeah. As a writer, number one, just to know that they appreciate what you wrote and what you were feeling that day when you were writing it, that's awesome. But then it's just an artist to know that your songs are getting heard and that people are coming to your shows to sing it back to you. I've never really had that before. We've had songs do well and go platinum stuff, but never number one where they really... They just know it.
So. Is Gabby... pronounce your wife's name.
Gabby. There you go.
Gabby.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. I'm actually from Louisiana.
Really?
No.
Oh, okay. I was like, wow, okay.
I was just going to ask if, you know, you have a lot of female fans. How is she with you being on the road with all
that? Oh, she's cool. And she knows there's nothing there. And really, my fans, sure, we have the young females, but we've really got strollers to wheelchairs. We see everything in my shows, which is different than your typical young country artist, I would say. But that's an effect of the show, number one, but just, you know, the music and the brand, I guess. But, yeah, she's all good. And she'll come on the road every now and then. She's busy. She's a nurse, but every now and then.
I want to ask you, you know, we're in an age of pop collaborations with country artists and pop.
Sure.
Maren Morris is on one. Stapleton is on one right now with Justin Timberlake. And Bebe Rexha is at the top of our Hot Country Songs chart with FGL. Right. Is there a pop star you would collaborate with?
I'm sure if the right thing came along, I mean, I'm a fan of a lot of those folks, but my voice in particular, deep country sounding, might not lend itself quite to a pop country collaboration. It could if the right thing.
I don't know. I think some of them would love it.
Really? Okay. If the right thing came along, you know,
that Bebe Rexha song to me sounds like a Florida Georgia Line hit.
It does.
You know, and she's lucky to be on there with them. To me, I always think, wow, that pop star is lucky to have Maren Morris singing with them, you know.
Yeah, Maren's on top of the world right now. She's killing it. So
yeah, she really is. Norbert, how do you feel about the country and pop collaborations?
I think those are, you know, if they're natural, you know, like a hit is natural and becomes a hit, then... And he knows somebody, and it just kind of comes together. That's great. To force that, I don't know, because I think, you know,
when
Scotty's
I was a country programmer, want to tell you, because you know this, how I felt about it back at the time is I hated it when I was in radio.
Right.
We were territorial. Like, we did not want our country artists to be
drifting
over to pop.
Yep. Huh.
And there was that whole thing about, you know, you didn't want it. You didn't want the songs crossing over because you wanted them listening to your radio station because they like country music.
Sure.
And you didn't want them veering off. And I think now it's probably a different thing where kids are listening to all, especially younger people. They're not in a box anymore, and it's a little different. But at the same time, you want to be proud that it's your genre. You know,
I agree.
At Billboard, I'll argue with people all the time that I'll say, you know, you think it validates when one of our artists sings with a pop star. And that's not the case at all.
Yeah.
You know, so we're always sticking up for the genre is what Absolutely. I'm saying. And when you hear your music, it's definitely country. I hope you enjoy that part of it.
I do. It's who I am. So I think that's my favorite part about this record.
But yeah, some of it is really up, you know, poppy, but with your staple on it,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, yeah. We definitely tried out some new sounds with this. And Kevin was talking about it last week. I think one of my favorite parts about this record is that pretty much every song, it's me. I'm the only one that can sing the song because it's about my personal life, you know. In previous records, you know, I might have the second hold on this song, but, you know, McGraw's got the hold on this one. So if he wants to do it, then he's got it. But this stuff, if I write and it's me and Gabby's song, or it's me and my friends from back home, and you know, nobody else can sing that. So I really love that.
Well, I just want to wish you more success down the road. By the way, you're wearing a hoodie that says Garth Brooks Ireland. Were you there with Garth?
No, he actually canceled these shows because they were doing five.
That.
But I have the same merchandise guy as him, so I got to go in the warehouse and pick it out.
It's cool. I just want to thank you for coming on today with us.
Absolutely.
Scotty McCreery, the new album Seasons Change. The release date is March 16th. All the luck in the world to you, although I don't think you need it at this point. But
we'll take it.
Congratulations on all your success. So happy for you.
Thank you very much.
And Norbert, I'm happy for you, too.
Thanks, Jim.
I've known Norbert a long time when he was working me on records, and we've been friends a long time, and I'm just so happy for your success here at Triple Tigers.
Thanks, Jim.
With Russell, I mean, the Russell record is tremendous. It's a hit. And you know, I just think it's really great for you.
We're having fun right now. You know, it's a good thing.
All right. Well, good luck to you both down the road. Okay.
Look forward to talking
to you again. This is Jim Asker on the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast.
Little silly, standing with my arms stretched open wide. I love you this big. Eyes have never seen this big. No one's ever dreamed this big. And I'll spend the rest of my life explaining what words cannot describe, but I'll try. I love you this big.
Remember that song? I Love You This Big, Scotty McCreery. That was his coronation song.
I fell in this idol void maybe after the season, like David Cook won.
Just when I started.
And it's like two ships passing in the night.
I drive people away.
I'll let you sort out that problem.
All right. That was his breakthrough hit, but now hitting new heights with his new number one that we heard earlier in the podcast. Five More Minutes, Scotty McCreery, number one on Country Airplay. Kind of cool how he said it's such a personal song written about his grandfather, who said 85 years old, was still doing cannonballs in the pool at that age. So he was just a really cool guy to be doing that at 85. So for him to write a song that celebrates that life, that's pretty nice. Makes it even more personal to get a number one, but it's but when it's something that means that much to you, that makes it even better.
I guess personal kind of leads in nicely to number 30. That's a good personal song coming up from winner of season 5, Taylor Hicks, gonna kick us off here back on a countdown of the top 40 American Idol hits of all time on the Billboard Hot 100. Here we go, numbers 30 through 26.
Standing out.
numbers 30 through 26 on the Billboard Hot 100 for American Idol contestants. We're looking back at the 40 biggest hits by contestants from season one back in 2002 all the way to the present. Now that Idol is back, we're doing a two-week special here on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast. Number 30, Champion from season five, 2006. Just like we were saying before, early summer was the week when an American Idol champion would pretty much every week in the mid-2000s debut at number one. Taylor Hicks, Do I Make You Proud, did that in 2006.
Yeah, it was kind of the, I mean, little did we know at the time, the end of the era. This was one we had seen season two, Clay did it, season three, Fantasia, season four, Carrie Underwood. Taylor is the last one.
That's right.
To send his coronation single to number one on the Hot 100. So, you know, how could we have known back then? But it was the end of an era.
I just liked it. There's an idol with gray hair. I can appreciate that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was trying to think of, you know, if you want to say, quote, where did Taylor go wrong? I mean, he kind of had a certainly more an adult-leaning sound, an adult-leaning look. You know, and the appeal was a little older, I think, than, you know, certainly Kelly Clarkson or even a Fantasia. And, I mean, maybe that, I mean, kind of in that blue-eyed soul moment. Again, a hard sell in an era where, you know, women, Lil Jon and T-Pain and
women,
Timbaland.
And women pop stars. It was the era when Taylor Swift and Katy Perry and Rihanna were taking over. So other than someone like Daughtry, who was with a band, it was kind of tough at that point for a male pop rock artist to fully break through. So I think that was part of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Number 29 on our countdown, One Step at a Time from Jordan Sparks, another winner. She was the next winner, season six in 2007. It was the number 17 hit on the Hot 100. Look at the writers of this song. Co-writer was Robbie Neville. So really catchy song. I always thought this was a really a catchy pop hit. And the pedigree of one of the writers, Robbie Neville, if you remember, in 1987, he had number two with this song. Piece of C'est La Vie by Robbie Neville. So a couple decades after having a number two hit on his own, he was writing hits for other artists, One Step at a Time for Jordan Sparks. Number 28 on our countdown, Daughtry once again. So there's more Daughtry coming up, but this is another one, Over You, one of nine adult pop songs top tens that Daughtry had. Great run. 2007, this song hit the top 20 on the Hot 100. Moving on to number 27, another winner. Season, those were going in order from Taylor Hicks to Jordan Sparks. David Cook, he's the next season, season seven, 2008. He was the winner. This song, number three hit on the Hot 100 in 2008. He's one of my favorite idols. So many of the songs he did in his run, and that was the first season I was really watching, he really did some inventive versions of songs that you'd known some ways, and he just put a totally different spin on them. And Mariah fan that I am, I have to mention, let's play a little clip of his version of Always Be My Baby.
You'll always be a part of me. I'm part of you indefinitely. Girl, don't you know you can't escape me? Oh, darling, cause you'll always be my baby. And we'll linger on. Time can't erase a feeling this strong. No way you're never gonna shake me. Ooh, darling, cause you'll always be my baby.
What do you think of that version? He took it, totally turned it into this haunting rock ballad.
Yeah, I remember just being, like you said, so impressed. I mean, when they would announce, you know, here comes David Cook to sing Always Be My Baby. You kind of think, okay, how is this going to work? This sort of, you know, fluffy pop R&B song, I mean, written in a very high key. How is this, you know, rock-leaning guy going to do this? And he would just tear it up and just make it sound so good. And I guess you have to say credit to not only himself for, you know, thinking of these new arrangements, but and also, you know, credit to him for just goes to show that a really good pop song or any song at its core can be sort of twisted and changed in these ways that break from the original, that you don't have to do it this one certain way. I mean, this is such a good song. You can do it as a rock song. You could do it as, I don't know, an opera, country song, whatever. I will say, to counter the lambness in Gary, when David Cook was on the show, he also did a in my opinion, an awesome cover of Michael Jackson's Billie Jean. Obviously, everyone knows what Billie Jean sounds like as done by Michael Jackson. Here it is as done by David Cook.
Both sides, it's one thing to take a song that was done one version, totally mix it up, because then you don't have the comparison to the original. But he also proved he could do a song in the same style as an original that would be very tough to compete with. If you remember, he did a cover of from Phantom of the Opera of Music of the Night. So didn't change anything there. He did a straight ballad version, but you could go horribly wrong trying to do that song. He did that really well, same as the original pretty much, but showed his vocal chops on that one. All right, that's David Cook portion of the countdown. Moving up to number 26, Never Again. Top 10 hit, number 8, 2007. But as you referenced before, Trevor, it's from her album After Breakaway, her third album, My December, that kind of did underwhelmingly compared to Breakaway. And it's really on purpose. She wanted to do something a little different, a little rockier on that song. So still got to the top 10. And if nothing else, maybe satisfied her creative urges at that point.
Yeah, I mean, this was when I know some Kelly fans were torn against. I mean, obviously, we were all really waiting for the single. It debuted at number 8, so it just goes to show what the anticipation was like. And yeah, I mean, it was a, like I said, it was a good personal statement. I'm sure she has no regrets making it, and there's no reason to. But yeah, it did not have the same commercial life, and it goes to show, I think, that, you know, it's all, I mean, a consistent battle, I think, between, you know, artists and labels, between vision and sort of hit making. I mean, it seems like obviously the vision won out in this one, but nice to know that it didn't sabotage her career, because sometimes, you know, one album that underperforms, and that can be the end of you. I mean, she really bounced back, you know, having number one hits on both of her next two albums. So just goes to show that you can never count an artist like Kelly out.
We have proof that she did go on after that coming up now. So we move on, number 25 through number 21 on our look back at the 40 biggest Hot 100 hits by American Idols. Would you wish you would have done? Yeah, we gotta stop looking at the hands of the time we've been given. If this is all we got, then we gotta stop thinking. If every second counts on the clock that's ticking, gotta live like we're dying. We only got 86 400 seconds in a day to turn it all around or to throw it all away. Gotta tell them that we love them while we got the chance to say. Gotta live like we're dying. Why we gotta fall for it now? I never meant to stop.
Thank you.
All right, and bringing us to the last portion of this week's countdown of the top 40 American Idol hits of all time on the Hot 100. We're going to wrap things up for this episode with 25 through 21. And at number 25, you guys just heard Live Like We're Dying by Chris Allen. So we had just two songs ago, David Cook, the season 7 winner. So now we're going to one up that with the season 8 winner, Live Like We're Dying, a number 18 hit on the Hot 100 back in 2010. And Chris Allen also, you know, a little bit of controversy with how he won. He beat out Adam Lambert in that season, who I think many people had pegged to win, if nothing else. I mean, obviously his vocals were amazing, but his personality, his outlandishness, obviously would have been a huge victory for the LGBT community. And this is also kind of the time where that sort of white guys with guitars trope starts to play in. We had David Cook, who had won the year before, in that kind of vein. Chris Allen as well. Going forward, it'll be Scotty McCreery, Philip Phillips.
A lot of that was sort of assumed that it was young female voters who were driving the voting, so that's why you got some of these young guys who would win.
But for Chris Allen, interestingly enough, Live Like We're Dying, as we've seen with a lot of these songs, lead single from the first album. This song, believe it or not, was actually originally recorded by The Script and was a bonus track on some editions of their debut album. So most fans didn't know about it, not a huge hit. Chris takes it on as a cover. Also gets a big radio breakthrough, number 10 hit on the pop songs chart, which actually makes him the first male Idol winner to hit the top 10 on the pop songs chart.
Yeah.
So something that a few of the women had done before, Kelly Clarkson, obviously, Jordan Sparks. But Chris making that breakthrough for the men 8 seasons in. Just above Chris, talking and speaking of Jordan, there she is at number 24 on this countdown with the song Battlefield, a number 10 hit back in 2009. This song was the lead single off her second album, also called Battlefield. Interesting kind of, you know, interesting, something I kind of just found out about this song. Written by the four-piece of Ryan Tedder, who obviously in that particular moment probably maybe even the biggest songwriter of the era. I mean, this is the guy writing Beyonce's Halo, so many hits for One Republic, Bleeding Love for Leona Lewis a couple years before. So, I mean, he's the guy to go to. Also written by Sam Waters, Wayne Wilkin, Lewis Bianchiello. Sorry, my Italian is not very good. Interestingly enough, three of those last guys, the non-Ryan Tedder guys, also wrote the song Energy by Carrie Hilson with Rico Love as well. Let me know if you can spot any kind of similarity between the two. We'll start with the song that first came out, Energy. And now here's Battlefield. You think, you know, interesting that they just...
Do you study
those hooks come a little close. I mean, obviously three of the four guys are the same, so maybe they, you know.
Do you study music law at Vanderbilt? Are you trying to get a plagiarism lawsuit going on here?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, as we'll talk about next week with another Idol big hit, there's another song on this countdown by a big Idol artist who people found a little too similar to a Queen Bee song as well that may have gotten this writer in some hot water. So just kind of interesting. You know, when I heard that sound, I was like, I know I've heard this before. Where is it?
My favorite thing about Battlefield is how many syllables she gets into field. Turns into like a 3 or 4 syllable. It's not just Battlefield. It's the field. It's a big field. It's drawn out.
That's, yeah. All right. At number 23, moving up, we got Kelly Clarkson with Mr. Know-It-All. And as we kind of mentioned a little earlier about the song Never Again, this song introducing Kelly's 5th album and is a number 10 hit on the Hot 100. So proving that even after My December didn't pan out the way I think, neither Kelly nor her label wanted to. She still had plenty of life in her. Talking 4 years down the road, 2011, still in the top 10 of the Hot 100. The lead in to her album Stronger. So we know, obviously, how massive a hit that title cut was. That'll be coming up way towards the top end of this countdown. But Kelly, I mean, again, almost a decade after she had won American Idol back in 2002, still producing top 10 material on the charts. And above Kelly Clarkson, I guess this maybe is the moment for a little Adam Lambert revenge, beaten by Chris Allen, who came in at number 25 on this countdown. At number 22, it is What Do You Want From Me? By Adam Lambert, another top 10 hit on the Hot 100, peaking at number 10 in the spring of 2010. This song, I think a lot of Pink fans will know, originally written by Pink and Max Martin, intended for Pink's Funhouse album, did not make the cut. Adam got a hold of it and turned it into a monster hit. And if you hear the song, I think you can definitely tell the Pink touches are on it. I think she would have done a great job with it. She actually has performed it live in a few of her concerts as well. But, I mean, Adam just, you know, such a great vocalist, it's hard to argue with his version as well.
Since this is Adam Lambert's only song on the countdown, we'll reveal that. We'll just take a quick moment to play. I always thought this song was really unique and also deserving to be a much bigger hit. We'll give it a spotlight here, member, for your entertainment. So hold on until it's over.
Maybe if you feel like you've heard this song before, seen it somewhere in a pop culture moment, this was the song he performed at the American Music Awards with a performance that was, some people thought maybe a little too aggressive, a little too risque for you know, sort of a mainstream network award show. There were a few complaints, definitely. I mean, he was, if for better or for worse, the talk of the day, the next day. If you missed that performance at the closing of the show, you heard a lot about it the next day. There were a lot of parents, I think, who were really not sure what to make of that. If you haven't seen the clip, just go watch it. It's it's just a great 3-minute experience. And to close us out this week on our countdown of the top 40 Idol hits, we're going to pause after number 21, which is Crush by David Archuleta, number 2 smash back in 2008. Archuleta is the season 7 runner-up to David Cook, so it was the battle of the two Davids out there. Cook became victorious, but Archuleta got him on the Hot 100. David Cook's Time of My Life peaked at number 3. Archuleta, his career high is that number 2 debut for Crush. And Crush was actually not even David Archuleta's, you know, Coronation Idol performance single. This was actually the first song off his debut album. So to debut at number 2 just goes to show, like, what an unusual committed sort of fan base there was out there for David Archuleta. I know he'd been on Star Search before, so he'd had some following for the past couple of years, but for Crush to debut at number 2, still to me, just a great pop song, just fun. I mean, the kid is probably, I think he's not even 17, 18 at this time, but just obviously a powerhouse voice, and you just can't kind of help with that, sing that little, the hook. I can't sing it, but you know, this is a song that you like sing in the shower, like roll your windows down and you just blare out loud.
He did it well enough. I just remember Simon Cowell would always be kind of tough on David Archuleta because he as you just said, he was 17 years old. He was so young. I said something
he was definitely like a nice guy, like a mama's boy almost kind of guy.
Say something like if you tried to do something a little bit different, a little more aggressive, we'd say it's like a poodle trying to be a lion or something. He would try to say in that typical Simon way. I think he meant it in a good way. But David Archuleta found his sound on this song. It was just a perfect vocal, great hook, great song to end on for part one.
And so coming up next week, we have the top 20. We will continue our journey up to the number one song by an American Idol of all time on the Hot 100. Probably half a guess if you can guess who it's by, but we'll be able to check some of those out. A few other winners up there, and we will shake up. If you missed some of the some names up there, Clay Aiken will be in next week's countdown. Of course, we'll see some more from Carrie Underwood, and don't worry, there is plenty more Kelly Clarkson to come.
And by the time we tape that episode, and by the time it airs, American Idol will have come back Sunday night on ABC. So we'll recap what Idol's like now here in 2018. New judges, some of these people who were not even around on the charts when Idol first started in 2002. Katy Perry, we didn't know who she was back then. Luke Bryan, we knew who Lionel Richie was.
Yeah, we had a good idea for Lionel Richie. And don't worry, we'll also keep an eye on the current Hot 100. If any shakeups happen, in particular some new debuts, I know maybe some people will be eyeing Top Off, DJ Khaled, Beyonce, Jay-Z, Future, where that might show up next week. And of course, we'll keep looking at Post Malone and Drake and seeing if that race gets any closer for the number one spot, if Post is lined up for his second number one in just 6 months, or if God's plan has a different plan.
Should we go out with a deep cut from Idol that's not in the top 40?
That sounds perfectly appropriate to me.
All right, I got one. Big hit in 2004. Not in our top 40, but let's remember Kimberly Locke, Eighth World Wonder. Wrapping up this week's Billboard Chartbeat podcast. We'll continue next week with numbers 20 through number one, the biggest Hot 100 hits by American Idols.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.